our trips are 30 days in length. We're too far from the dock to, you know, run ashore every time there's a threat of bad weather. So you get good at exercising good seamanship. And to me, I mean, good seamanship is 50% experience and 50% common sense.
Welcome to the Woman Angler and Adventurer Podcast, inspiring real women with a passion for fishing and the outdoors to go get their adventure on. Now, here's your host, Master Captain Angie Scott.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Woman Angler and Adventurer Podcast, the new 2024 season. And I'm super honored to have a special guest on with me this week. Listener, I asked for recommendations at the end of last season. If anybody knew of any guests that I haven't had on the show yet, we're over 300 episodes at this point. And Christina Donahue, a listener of the show, heard that request and reached out to me and said, would you please have Linda Greenlaw on the show? And so I did some research and I was like, oh my goodness, what an amazing idea. Reached out to Linda and now here we are. Linda, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Angie. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So just to kind of set the scene a little bit, tell the listeners where you're actually at right now.
I am aboard a boat tied to a dock in Stonington, Maine, 50-foot. It's a commercial lobster boat.
And I wouldn't expect you to be anywhere else.
Right?
So,
wow. Any opportunity, this is where you'll find me. Unfortunately, I do have to spend some time at other places, but that's real work.
So let's just kind of go back and give listeners a background on you know, how you got into fishing. And just to give you a little background, you know, this show, we feature all sorts of anglers. I've had some other female commercial fishermen on the show before, but nothing to this caliber. So, and I personally, I fish bass tournaments. And so that's kind of where the focus is kind of gone. So we have a lot of competitive bass angler ladies listening to the show right now. But you know, you're from a different world. So, give listeners just a little background on yourself and how you, became so passionate about fishing.
All right. I guess a good place to start would be, at the beginning. I was raised on and off the coast of Maine, where boats and fishing are really the way of life. I spent my very early childhood, learning how to row. I probably knew how to row before I could ride a bike. And it wasn't long getting into my first like 10 horsepower outboard motor, skiff. I was catching anything that swam or crawled along the shores of my home. Very quickly fell in love with it, became a passion. At the age of 19, when I was accepted into Colby College, I needed to make some real money. And I signed on as a deckhand aboard the Walter Alden Lehman Sr., which is a 70-foot wooden sword fishing vessel out of Oars Island, Maine. And it was at the age of 19 where I absolutely fell in love with my life. Fell in love with a lifestyle, offshore fishing, pursued a swordfish. Swordfish is a fun fish to catch. So kind of grew up hauling lobster traps, quickly get into offshore blue water fishing, fished my way through Colby College. And after I graduated, I started my career of offshore fishing.
Awesome.
Started fishing year round and became a captain, I say by attrition. You know, I stayed on the same boat long enough to, you know, become, you know, I'd done every job on the boat, from butcher, gear girl, engineer, became first mate. And then the owner of the boat bought a second boat. And that was really my first opportunity as skipper.
Wow.
And the rest is history. I have fished many different boats, many different fisheries, really all over the world. I've fished, the North Atlantic Ocean from Brazil to Labrador, I've fished the Indian Ocean from Kenya and Somalia to the Maldives. More recently, I fished the Bering Sea out in Alaska, out of Dutch Harbor. I did that last fall and last winter. Most of my experience is sword fishing, but I've done a lot of different fisheries in between. Anyway, that's it pretty much in a nutshell.
Yeah, well, a little bit to unpack there. Just want to go back to, you said fishing it was a way of life where you grew up. Did you have any mentors or anybody that really kind of, took you by the hand and got you into it, or was just a natural thing that you
yeah,
just
got
into?
It was pretty much a natural thing. I was raised on an island off the coast of Maine, and really the only thing to do there to make money is to go fishing, unless you're the school teacher or the postmistress. Everyone fishes. So every kid, male, girl or boy, spends all or part of their childhood in the stern of someone's boat or fishing their own traps or both. Mm-hmm. So, it's just what you do.
Yeah.
A lot of kids, as they grow up, go into fishing, and a lot of them don't. I happen to be one that just really fell in love with it and stayed with it. I have guy friends who were sort of born into it and stayed with it. But the ones who don't love it are like the most miserable people I know, even though they're my friends. It's like, oh my God, you spent your whole life doing something you hate.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything worse than being at sea and not loving it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a rare thing, unfortunately, when somebody gets to actually live out their passion, and that's the way it should be, I think. So very cool. Let's talk a little bit more about sword fishing. Do you remember your first experience catching one?
Well, it's when I first got into it at the age of 19, we were fishing George's Banks, which is off the New England coast. And, the trips are basically kept in sight, in sync with the lunar cycle. So the trips are 28 to 30 days in length. So it's offshore, for an extended period of time. The fish themselves, we were long lining and harpooning back then, like 1979, let's say 1978, 1979 was just prior to the Hague Line, which is a 200 mile limit between Canada and United States. So there was really fertile ground for harpooning back then. And that's really a fishery that you fall in love with. I mean, that's a sight fishery. It's very primitive. It's a handheld, hand-thrown harpoon, nothing mechanized about it at all. you see a fish put the boat on it, guy in the end of the stand throws a harpoon and hopefully hits it. And then that's just part of it. Then you still have to, get the fish on the boat. We were also long lining, which is fishing with hooks, long line. A typical set would be 40 miles. So it's very industrial, but it's still fun. When it comes down to a fish on a hook, even though everything's hydraulic, when a fish is on, it's still one man and one fish, hauling hand over hand by, trying to get the fish to break the surface and get gaffs in it and get it aboard the boat. So very much hunter gatherer in the swordfish fishery, I guess, like most fisheries. But anyway, it's fun. I mean, swordfish are, they're beautiful when they're alive. They come aboard kicking and screaming. And of course, swordfish are somewhat unique, with that big bill. Mm. It's like kind of like catching unicorns all day. it's a really fun fishery, and it's one that I've enjoyed, for many, many years.
Yeah. It looks super, super exciting. And, I mean, for a woman to be out there getting after it, captaining a boat, doing this day in, day out is, really inspiring for a lot of ladies. One of my favorite things about this podcast is talking to people like you who've kind of paved the way and kind of, showing girls, hey, you can do this. if you want to, and if you're passionate about it, and that's just really inspiring. So thank you for kind of paving the way for a lot of ladies. I can tell, you know, you're competitive as well. And I just want to kind of ask your advice. There's a lot of, like I said, competitive bass anglers out there that I know that listen to this podcast. And one thing that we've been kind of talking about is that it's been since 2010 since there's been a lady in the Bassmaster Classic, which is kind of the Super Bowl for bass fishing. And there's some young girls coming up right now that are you know, really trying to make a go of it. What advice might you have for them in that kind of regard?
Well, you know, I do some recreational fishing, some rod and reel stuff. There's nothing I love more than giant bluefin fishing, which is commercial, but you know, it's still, it's rod and reel. So it's more of a sport, sport techniques on a commercial fishery, which makes it extra fun. And you know, it's work at the end of the day. The reason I know that I've been successful fishing is I know how to work, and you can't catch them if they're not there. So, you know, you do need to do your homework. There's a lot of science to it. Sword fishing in particular, any fish you're catching with a hook, there's a lot more science, a lot more finesse, a lot more experience goes into catching, as opposed to towing a net or hauling traps, which I do a lot of. I lobster fish in the summer and fall here. I'm in Maine. So, you know, it's find something you love to do. And if it's fishing, if it's bass fishing, which I personally have never done, it's work, you know, and it, where, you know, a small degree of it is luck. Yeah. Anybody can go out and drop a hook on a fish's head once, but to do it consistently, it's a lot more, lot more than luck.
So it sounds like what you're saying is, you know, the biggest thing is just put in the work. Really doesn't matter at all if you're male or female.
Oh yeah. I mean, male, female's got nothing to do with it. I mean, you know, I've spent, you know, many, many years, saying that, you know, people, some, you know, they find it remarkable that, that a female, has done what I do. And I'm like, you know, this is remarkable that anyone does this.
Absolutely.
And, you know, forget about the female part. What does that have to do with it? It's remarkable that anyone can do it or would do it or would love to do it.
Awesome. Well, that's a good good way to look at it, and so true. That kind of is a good segue into what I wanted to talk about next is, you know, these waters that you fish, they're not always kind. And I imagine that you've had to, you know, I'm growing up in it, I'm sure you were born with respect for the water and Mother Nature, but it's not an inherently safe activity. Can you talk a little bit about the respect for the water and, you know, some of the dangers? And I'm sure you've got many, many stories over the years in that regard.
Oh, yeah. You know, the Grand Banks fishing for swordfish, which is many, many of my years' experience. That season is May through October, which is also hurricane season, you know, in the Northern Hemisphere. And so, yeah, I have a lot of experience in bad weather. As I said before, our trips are 30 days in length. We're too far from the dock to, you know, run ashore every time there's a threat of bad weather. So you get good at just exercising good seamanship. And to me, I mean, good seamanship is 50% experience and 50% common sense. So, you know, there are things that you do and things that you don't do. I've had my share of bad weather. People, you know me as that woman who survived the perfect storm. So I was portrayed in the movie and the book, which makes it kind of interesting meeting people for the first time. I get a lot of ooh, we thought you'd be a lot bigger, you know, after how long. But I've kind of become callous to that. People are a little surprised when they meet me. But
that.
And, you know, I've run a lot of big boats, but having said that, they all get small.
I can imagine. I mean, fishing from a little bass boat, been out there in some pretty windy conditions, but obviously nothing like what you face. But I have the same feeling when it gets rough out there. It's like, I'm just this little peon out here, you know, and this water is definitely something to respect and always think about safety and whatnot. But I know, you know, you mentioned the movie and the book, The Perfect Storm, definitely impacted your career. I actually remember seeing that movie in the theater when it came out, and we had gotten there late, so we had to sit in the very front row. If you can imagine watching that from the front row. But that's super cool. So that's kind of, you know, like I've heard you say in videos and things I've watched, kind of changed the course of your career in a good way, I hope. And, you know, led you to also becoming a best-selling author yourself. Talk a little bit about that first book. And I know you had mentioned at some point it was one of the hardest things you've done writing that book. So talk a little bit about that.
All right, sure. Yeah. The very generous portrayal of me in The Perfect Storm did bring a lot of opportunity my way. And as you mentioned, one of those opportunities was to write my own book. My first book is The Hungry Ocean. It took me a year to write it. And it's the hardest work I've ever done. And I mean, I thrive on hard work. But boy, writing is a totally different type of work. It's the same as in discipline and having to do it every day. But man, I give me a little storm any day. I'd much rather do that than, the daunting task of sitting down and getting something from your head, your heart, and your gut onto paper in a way that might be appealing to anyone. Mm. And it's very humbling. You know, hey, here's a little slice of me. How do you like it? It makes the writing that much harder knowing that, you know, people are going to read it.
Yeah, I can imagine. So I recommend everybody out there go, if you haven't already read The Hungry Ocean, go check it out. How many books have you written now?
Oh, 11.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I thought I'd be like the one book wonder. The Hungry Ocean, you know, did very well, and that led to another opportunity. Wrote a book called The Lobster Chronicles. That did well. And it just kept, it kind of snowballed on me. But it's been great. It's been, although the work is hard and it's work that I don't enjoy, it has, you know, opened the door to other opportunities. So, you know, it's all good.
Yeah, very cool. And then you've also been on a couple, I guess, reality TV series. I use reality with like air quotes.
Right.
Because we all know, you know, that they're not always 100% accurate. But talk a little bit about that experience, because that's like, you know, totally different.
Right. And the first one was I did 3 seasons of Swords, Life on the Line, which is a Discovery show. That was, oh God, it must have been, I don't know, 15 years ago. I don't know, a while ago. I did the only 3 seasons, and I was on 3 different boats, 1 different boat each season. And that was originally very much documentary style, the first season. Mm-hmm. It was originally shot as a documentary. After the filming of the first season, the footage was purchased by Discovery Channel, and then it was edited in more of a reality show type of way. Mm-hmm. And then the next 2 seasons were more reality show. And then more recently, last fall and winter, I was in Alaska filming The Deadliest Catch on a boat called Summer Bay, crab fishing and cod fishing. And that was even more like reality show. I guess 19 seasons in, and the fishery being not what it was when they started filming The Deadliest Catch, you know, there's not as much quota. So, you know, they focus more on the human element than the fishing itself. Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, it's a very popular show, and I think that's what people enjoy, is, you know, the characters.
Yeah.
And the human drama. Well, mixed with Mother Nature, of course, because that's kind of what makes the show is, you know, the elements, especially on the Bering Sea.
Yeah.
Thus The Deadliest Catch. And it's nice because, you know, between The Perfect Storm and The Deadliest Catch and some of these other books and shows that have come out, it really has opened the eyes of the public in general to commercial fishing, mm-hmm. which is great. I mean, it's something I've been doing all my life, and it's great that people are like intrigued with it. And, you know, through these shows and books, I've had people tell me, you know, oh, you know, I've always wanted to go sword fishing, and I read, you know, The Hungry Ocean. I really feel like I've been now. So those are like the best compliments I get, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like I've been there.
Well,
so that's cool.
So cool that you've had this illustrious career and have had all these different aspects from books to television, the movie, and just to represent as a female again, just super inspiring, I think, for a lot of young ladies out there that, you know, look up to you and are inspired by the you know, she can do it, maybe I can do it too. And so thank you for...
Believe me, if I can do it, anyone can.
It's...
Just be stubborn and know you have to work hard.
Right. Awesome.
Really, that's it.
Are you ready to take your bass fishing game to the next level? Look no further than iBass 360. Introducing the all-new digital iBass 360 magazine, the ultimate resource for fishing enthusiasts. Get exclusive access to in-depth articles, gear reviews, and expert advice from the pros. Plus, enjoy stunning photography and videos that will make you feel like you're right on the water. Don't miss out on the best bass fishing experience. Go to iBass360.com and subscribe to the magazine today to start reeling in the big ones. iBass 360, where every cast counts. Live the passion. Thank you for being such a great representative. And before we wrap this up, because I know you probably got work to do, but I want to just touch on what you're doing now. I know you've got Linda Greenlaw Charters. I was looking at some of the different trip options that you offer. Makes me want to get on a plane and fly up there and check some of this stuff out. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's a great summer and fall gig. So I commercial lobster fish, and a few years ago I started doing some charters, most of which were hauling traps with people, which is really fun. Yeah, I resisted the doing charters for many years, thinking, oh, you know, I'm a commercial fisherman, I don't want people on my boat, blah, blah, blah. Well, I'll tell you what, the older I get, the more I enjoy sharing what I've done all my life with people who are interested and curious. And yeah, it's really a lot of fun.
I imagine it's got to be quite rewarding as well.
It is, especially like people who come aboard and they have kids. It's really fun. The kids really dig it, you know, ask a lot of questions, and they can get a little hands-on if they want with me. That's fine. If they want to band lobsters and. Awesome. Yeah, it's fun. It's a good time. I do other types of tours, but that really is the most popular one. I'm also an oyster farmer. I have an aquaculture company. So sometimes that, you know, lends itself pretty well to tours as well, teaching people a little education piece about aquaculture and growing oysters, and some samples are always included in that tour, which is good. Yeah.
Awesome.
So it's fun. It's fun at all, you know, anything I can do on the water, aboard one of my boats, is good. So I, you know, I try to keep a lot of stuff going on, keep me busy.
Yeah. Very cool. Well, you've made a career of being on the water, and sometimes when somebody lives their passion like that, you can kind of get complacent or, you know, take it for granted. Have you ever had moments like that?
No, I can honestly say I've been doing this since I was very young. I am now 63 and I haven't slowed down. And I've not become jaded by it. I mean, there's still just every reason to just be dumbfounded or awestruck by something you see. Sword fishing, we see whales every single day, and you never see a whale without kind of nudging the guy next to you. Hey, humpback, finback. You know, it's the same way at night, just the night sky. People who haven't seen the night sky from at sea, it's just breathtaking. That stuff just doesn't get old.
That's awesome. Love it.
And same thing with catching a fish. You know, that first fish you catch, a little tug, you know, at the end of the line, and it kind of goes directly to your stomach or your chest. And that's the same today, catching a fish for me. Doesn't matter if it's a little tiny mackerel or a 1,000-pound giant bluefin tuna. It still really gets me.
Love that. You know, and you mentioned the night sky. That's one of the tours that you offer, full moon rise tour, public sunset tour, all of those little moments that you've gotten to experience so many times over the years. I love that you're giving the opportunity to share that with others who, you know, don't have that experience. So LindaGreenlawCharters.com. Everybody definitely go check that out. What does the future look like for you, do you think?
Oh, well, the immediate future is I got to get off this boat and drive home. I'm working on a couple of boats ashore. I have a new boat to me that I'm doing some modifications to in preparation for the spring of hauling lobster traps and maybe doing some touring. I don't know as I'll use this one for chartering. I'm not really sure yet. Mm. Definitely some bluefin fishing. It's really set up great for that. Mm. Maybe fish a couple of tournaments. I haven't done that in several years, so I'm kind of looking forward to that. Bluefin tournaments.
Nice.
And that's it. I mean, as much time as I can spend on the water, the more the better.
I hear you. I love it. Well, we glossed over a lot in a short amount of time, but I really can't thank you enough for taking some time out of your day to be on the Woman Angler and Adventurer podcast. And I know, you know, there's a lot of ladies out there that probably haven't come across you yet. So they're going to be excited to learn about you. And you'll go back and watch some of those shows, get your books. So thank you so much again. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Angie. Take care.
All right.